Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast Pod Shots.
Zardoz speaks to you. His chosen ones, the gun is good. Go forth and kill.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1974 film Zardoz. The film was written and directed by John Borman and stars Sean Connery and Charlotte Rampling. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Will Pfeiffer.
Hi, Eric.
Hi. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And we should also mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. So, Will, are you going to continue the sort of string of disappointment that I've been having with Podshot episodes and having guests not drinking alcohol?
You know, I have a 9-year-old I just put to bed, and I have a job early tomorrow. I am drinking a glass of refreshing water.
I think last time it was coffee. So coffee, water, I like the consistency.
Right. And I drink now and then. I just rarely drink this late because it's going to be.
There you go. Got an early morning.
That's right.
Got an early morning. I don't have an early morning. Unlike you, I just got off work.
So what do you have?
From the Lagunitas Brewing Company.
Ah.
I'm having an Undercover Investigation Shutdown Ale.
Wow.
Yeah. It is a 9.3% by volume. Lagunitas is very potent in their in their brews. It's very very hoppy. It says net contents 12 fluid ounces of hops, malt, hops, hops, yeast, hops, water, and hops. And their little tagline is "Beer speaks, people mumble."
Very good. So, I've never heard of that before.
Oh yeah, it's good. I would say that they're probably no offense to my local breweries, that's probably the beer that I buy the most is Lagunitas.
Nice.
And it's very strong tasting.
It sounds strong.
Yeah.
And hoppy.
And very hoppy. Yeah. So, but it's good. I do enjoy it. It's one of those where you have one or two and you're pretty well set for a while.
Yeah, you sound like you'd be good after a couple.
Yeah, you're pretty good. Okay, so let's go ahead and start off our discussion of Zardoz.
This is the future. Our future. The Earth has been divided into two separate worlds. The Vortex, a perfectly structured utopia, where man's ultimate technology has conquered death for a chosen few.
Here, man will never die, but go forward to perfection.
Surrounding the vortex are the outlands. Passionate, barbaric, dying. Where hordes of exterminators freely slaughter on the command of Zardoz, god of the vortex.
The gun is good.
The gun is good!
Go forth and kill.
20th Century Fox presents Zardoz, starring Sean Connery as Zed, the invader from the Outlands, chosen to discover the flaw in paradise.
How did you get into the vortex? What is your purpose?
I don't remember.
Tell me. Show me. You must tell me.
No.
Kill it, May.
No.
May has been given 7 days to complete her study. Then Zed will be terminated.
Zed arouses in the people of the vortex a forgotten sensuality.
Life flows out of you, flows into us.
You must be destroyed.
Why?
Can you unknow what you know now about me?
Here is a new kind of adventure.
No! 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 No!
The future hopes of mankind depend on one man. This is a race against time in a timeless world. A startling look into the future. Our future. Zardoz, a film by John Borman.
And the IMDb plot synopsis, oh boy, goes like this.
Yeah.
Zed is an exterminator, a savage warrior living in a post-apocalyptic future world. Like all exterminators, Zed worships a stone head called Zardoz as a god. Zardoz promises all those who worship that when they die, they will go to the Vortex, a community inhabited by immortal men and women. Zed finds himself in Zardoz's mouth, and Zardoz arrives in the Vortex. Zed's arrival in the Vortex begins to cause disruption as Zed sets out to discover the secrets of Zardoz, where Zed encounters a stranger, named Arthur Freyan in a library, and Arthur teaches Zed to read and reveals Zardoz's secrets, which could bring about the fall of all life in the Vortex and lead Zed to giving the immortals the gift of death. So, that is it
in a nutshell.
That is Zardoz. Interesting how we got to this one, because you had suggested this one to me. And I said, well, the only thing I know about that is the infamous Sean Connery outfit.
The red diaper.
the red diaper. And I was like, for real? And you're like, yeah, let's do that one. All right. I'll do it. So what is it, what's your history with this movie? How did we come about this?
You know, I've been hearing about this movie ever since I was in college, and I would buy, Danny Perry's books about cult films. He devotes a chapter to Zardoz. It's one of those movies you always heard about. They might have shown it on campus even, like, you know, in a cult film night. But I didn't see it then. It's one I've heard about, read about, heard, you know, people talk about, seen things on the internet, but I've never seen it. And then one day they recently released it on Blu-ray, and I thought, if I'm going to watch it, I'm going to watch it, you know, as the best possible quality I can. And so I ordered it up, popped in the player, and I finally watched it for the first time just about a month ago. And I've seen a lot of strange movies in my day, but this is one strange movie.
Yes, it is. It is very odd. I wonder if the Blu-ray highlights some of the dated aspects of it.
It does, because this movie, it only... it was made back in 1974, and it only cost $1.5 million to make, which is, you know, not, back then it wasn't bargain basement, but you can, in the high def of the Blu-ray, you can definitely see some of the corners that were cut. Some of the costumes look a little cheap. The sets, these are not elaborate sets. These are, you know, they're very 70s kind of sets, and sort of cheap 70s sets that a lot of outdoor stuff. The Blu-ray is by showing everything crisply as you can get, at least the Blu-ray may not be doing this movie favors in some regards.
Yeah, it makes me think that, you know, watching it on a CRT TV or whatever those are called, you know, the non flat screen. That's right. I don't even know what it's called anymore. But watching it on like a tube TV on a VHS and having the VHS sort of worn.
Right.
Be like, oh yeah, okay, this is exactly, you know, I get this. Watching it in all of the polish, I think would probably highlight it. I just saw it off of, I got it off of Amazon, and rented it there, and of course just went with the standard def. I was like, I don't need to. I'm sure this is not going to be a high def situation for my rental. And yeah, it is definitely strange. One of the strange doesn't take long to get here either. I mean,
it's right off the bat.
It starts out and we have the floating head.
Head, we should emphasize, is giant. It's a giant floating stone face with a beard and a big wide open mouth.
Not even that though. Before that, we have the floating head of Arthur Freyan.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you're right. The intro.
Yeah. And he's floating around, and I'm like, what the hell is this about? You know,
it's like the actor's actual head against the black background, kind of talking to the audience.
Yeah, and we have this, we have like the penciled in goatee.
Yes, like John Waters or something.
Yeah, and I'm like, what's happening? Like, why is, what? You know, I just was like, what is the purpose here? And I later read that intro was filmed to help explain things to the audience to make it more clear.
I heard the same thing.
And I was like, the hell? More clear? It's like, I had no idea what that was about. And I was sitting there looking at it like, what in the hell has Will got me into here?
I know, because right off, I had almost forgotten. I mean, that tells you how strange the movie is that I would forget about the floating head of Arthur Frayne at the beginning. But yeah, it doesn't make it more clear. It just starts the craziness that much earlier.
Sure, but then we get the big stone head.
Right.
Zardoz. And I see it and I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. Like,
it is kind of, it's a striking image.
Yeah, it's something, you know, I don't think it's too out of the realm of possibility to see something like that in a modern blockbuster sort of movie.
No, and it looks pretty good. I mean, it's well designed, and it looks kind of cool.
It looks all right, especially when you look close and you're at the very beginning when it's near the ground, and I'm like, oh, okay, it's not supposed to quite be on the ground yet.
No.
Because I was like, oh, it's not touching over there. I was like, oh, that sucks. You know, I was like, they didn't do a very good job there. And then they cut to a closer angle, and I'm like, oh, no, it is supposed to be floating. Okay. And then later it's on the ground, and I think later it's in the air again. I'm like, well, whatever.
And then the head starts to speak, and it spits guns and ammunition at everybody on the ground.
Yeah, it starts doing the throw up of guns.
Yeah, just like, and it says, what is it? The gun is good. The penis is evil.
The penis is evil. Yeah. And what was funny was, you know, everyone starts bowing.
Mm-hmm.
All of the men dressed in the red diapers.
These are all like, yeah, the Sean Connery, the Brutals.
Yes, yes. The executioners in the, because there's Brutals and Immortals, right?
Right.
And he's an exterminator, I guess.
Yeah, exterminator.
And so they're all starting to like bow down, but they're not real tightly grouped, you know, you still have some audio that's present. And I couldn't help but think of Monty Python.
Right. It had, well, and plus it's filmed, I guess, I think it was filmed in Ireland, maybe.
Ireland or Scotland. I can't remember which. Yeah.
But it has that kind of foggy, kind of low budget thing that, like Holy Grail has, that kind of a thing.
Yes. And I kept, you know, and I was like, wait a minute now, because I knew so little about this. I was like, well, they're playing this straight, right? And then I got a couple more minutes into it. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, they're playing it straight. Like,
They're playing it straight, all right.
I was like, all right, well, this is interesting. And so I did think that was interesting that we have, I think it was the ammo that really was more upsetting to me when he starts throwing up the guns and ammunition. Mm-hmm. Because the ammo is, I believe it's red. And so I thought it was like sort of some kind of a blood thing. And I was like, what in the hell?
Yeah, I think it's like shotgun shells. And
Yeah. And so I was like, wow, that's a striking image. And then we have, you know, you have the unseen extra or whatever throwing all the guns out. and so I was like, okay, well, this is definitely going to be worth discussing. Like this is definitely an interesting movie. But yeah, so we have, and we have not too long after that, Zed, Sean Connery's character,
mm-hmm.
Getting into the mouth, right?
Right. He kind of sneaks up into the head.
Yeah, and
Zardoz.
I kept thinking I was missing something.
Right, it does. It's like a quick cut, and he's like inside hiding under grain. And I wasn't quite sure how he got there or why, how he knew to go there.
Yeah, and I was like, wait a minute, what happened? How did he get covered? Mm-hmm. You know, and he has this total, like, it makes me think George Miller was watching this because it has this total Mad Max, like, escape from the sand look from Mad Max Fury Road. And I was like, holy cow, that's like they almost look the same shot, you know. And so I was like, well, that's kind of cool. I was like, that looks neat at least. I don't know what they were thinking with Connery's getup.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Sean Connery, I think a good looking guy. I think we can all agree. You know, this is right. You know, this is pretty soon after his last James Bond movie, a couple years after. And, Yeah, it's a red diaper and like then a bandolier of ammunition crossing is just right. and a ponytail.
And a huge Frank Zappa mustache.
Oh yeah.
And so I was like, wow, that's a look. It's distinctive.
It is. It's very distinctive.
You know, I mean, like I said, that was the thing that I knew about the movie was that. So what are you thinking at this point? Like, are you like, all right, this is weird, but whatever. I'm all for it.
I was into it. I'm willing to, you know, I mean, it was for the movie's faults, and the movie has many faults. It's, especially the beginning, it's interesting. It makes you want to see, okay, where's this going? Cause you know, you got Sean Connery. And you got the giant head, you got the ammunition, you got him hiding, and then he kills Arthur Frame, the guy who's running the big head.
Yeah, he kills him like right away.
Yeah, it's before you even realize that that's the same guy who was at the beginning, sort of.
Yeah, and he shoots him, and it was weird because the shot was like, I thought it was in his arm or something is where the squib was.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, is he supposed to be dead really? Or what's, you know, and I was like, all right, whatever, he's dead, fine. And he gets into this world of the immortals, and we end up with Charlotte Rampling's character, and we have these.
She's Consuela.
Consuela, yes, and she.
Strangely named Consuela.
And she doesn't like him whatsoever, nope. And, you know, and Charlotte Rampling, I mean, she's been around for a while, and she's been a striking woman for a long time.
Right. I mean, yeah, this is, you know, she's in, you know, one of my favorite Woody Allen movies that a lot of people can't stand is Stardust Memories, and she's in that. And that was a few years after this even. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been around for a while.
Yeah. And so she, you know, is very much against this sort of brute. And they kind of, you know, it's these bored immortals. And
right, because now he's in the world where normally the brutals couldn't get to, this sort of, you know, what they think of as heaven, this sort of, you know, idyllic paradise where all the immortals, you know, they're living forever and they're all very sophisticated and upper class and they look upon him as like an animal coming into this.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, is that, okay, help me with this. So this is...
I will try.
we'll say that it was Ireland. Is it supposed to be like, because they were talking about all the different zones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were like, oh, you know, you're approaching the zone. And at one point he's trying to like, he's pressing his face against one of the zones.
Right, right.
And get through.
Yeah. The only way he could get through is in the head, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you can't physically get across them. So I was like, all right. So their idea of heaven is just one of these different zones that they can't get to. And then,
I think they were led to believe by, you know, the Zardos.
Yeah. By the deity.
Right, the which we learn is, you know, fake, and it was designed to get them to, you know, gather grain and sort of do the bidding of the immortals. That I think they were told to do this so they could get into quote unquote heaven, even though I don't think they were ever going to get into that heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And heaven, it turns out, is just a different place, you know, behind a shield where all the immortals live and live forever, which hence the name immortals.
Sure. And then there wasn't just the two zones though, right? I mean, there were several different ones.
Yeah, it's implied that there are other zones. There's parts of this movie, cause this movie is loaded with ideas and concepts and philosophies. And some of them, like the zones, I just kind of, I didn't quite get.
Sure, sure. I can definitely see that because I think that's, this was after Deliverance, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think that's why he got to make it, because Deliverance was such a huge hit.
Yeah, and I believe that I read that they said basically, you know, the next one's yours, because he was wanting to do an adaptation of Lord of the Rings.
Right, right, he was.
And that didn't pan out, and so they said, okay, well, you can do whatever, basically.
And he did.
And so he says, all right, I got this movie Zardoz, and he went through a few people before Sean Connery.
I think Burt Reynolds at one point.
Yeah, Burt Reynolds, and then I also read that that Sean Connery was struggling to find work, was the report.
Yeah, after the Bond era.
After Bond, which is odd.
Yeah.
You know, it would be like, you know, Daniel Craig or Christian Bale or whatever can't find work after Bond or Batman. You're like, what? Really?
Yeah, really? I know, but.
But, or it could have been his payday. Because they said because of him struggling, he agreed to only take $200,000, which was still, you know, nearly like an eighth of the budget.
Yeah. But, so yeah, but it seems, I guess, low for a guy like Sean Connery, maybe. But yeah. That, it was, you know, 40-some years ago. So.
Sure. You think of a guy taking, like, an eighth of the budget now, like, of an Avengers movie?
Oh, so, yeah.
Holy shit. So, anyway, so, yeah, they get so Zed gets in there, and he is kind of – they're kind of, like, amused by him for a little while.
Right. He said there's another woman named May.
She
likes him. Mm-hmm. But Consuela does not like him at all.
Yeah, and so she's kind of intrigued, and they have that really interesting sequence where they're trying to figure out what arouses him.
Yes.
And I thought that was really quite clever. I wasn't really expecting to see an outline of a penis in the movie, but...
No. I mean, because the implication is that all the men in the vortex, they... The men are all infertile. They like don't have erections, I guess, or sex or anything at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're impotent or the women are infertile or something.
Mm-hmm. But they're all mortal, so it doesn't, you know, they don't need to procreate or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's definitely the men because later it's clear that they are able to reproduce.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So they were just trying to use him as you know, the way that humans would use a chimp, and they're just kind of studying him.
It is. It's almost played like a weird little classroom scene, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like a teen sex comedy scene almost in this weird science fiction movie.
Yeah. And they show him different sequences, and they're like, wait a minute, he's not aroused by this. Right. And he just looks at Consuela, and then his little meter goes crazier.
And they're all like looking at him like,
And that was good because I think she played embarrassed really well in that in that moment. And you know, that's the traditional Sean Connery, like, he's basically winking at her without winking at her. You know, it's that kind of look. He's like, you know, we both know what's happening here, that sort of thing.
I mean, if you want to cast a guy who's like the last virile man on the face of the earth, Sean Connery's your man, I think.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's where they definitely got that right. So yeah, I do appreciate that. I guess the next sequence that I really had a note about was Friend.
Right. He's the kind of, he's like one of the cynical members. He's kind of like, you know, I mean, they're all kind of bored, but he's like really like, I've seen it all. I've done it all. He wants some change, and he kind of becomes his buddy, although you're not quite sure whether to trust him or not.
Sure. Because it's the type of movie to where you're not sure what's going to happen the next, you know, minute or two.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It changes. Trust or anything, you know? And so that's, I would say uneven is probably the way that I would describe the film.
Yes, you were quite right.
Yeah, you know, because I think that there's sequences that I really enjoy quite a bit, and there's ideas that I really like. It does strike as a guy that's allowed to do whatever he wants, though.
You know, right.
From the director. And the sort of closest that I can relate to is for the regular numbered episodes, we had Sean Pryor on, and we talked about movies with aliens, and we talked about Star Wars Episode I.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean and Rachel and I talked about how, you know, at this time, there's nobody to say no. You know, there's nobody to tell George Lucas, no, you can't do this.
Right, that's a good point. I just a couple days ago finished reading this book called How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, which I highly recommend. It sort of examines Star Wars from Lucas's childhood on, you know, up until J.J. Abrams is named as the next director. But it talks a lot about how, Phantom Menace, this is Lucas sitting down and, you know, he was going to do it. Nobody was going to tell him what he could do. Like it or not, that is a director, an artist in control of what he wanted to put on the screen.
Sure. And so without anyone limiting him, it comes across as a little bit of a mess.
Mm-hmm. And, which this movie too, although, you know, even though I'm no fan of Phantom Menace, I'd rather see somebody really swing for it, you know, than kind of deliver a safe, you know, just kind of a safe movie that they want to please someone. I mean, Zardoz, it doesn't work, but it is a fascinating fiasco, I think.
Oh, I definitely agree, because I think that that's part of the problem, and we talked about this before we started recording with the recently released episode on Tomorrowland. is in that episode we have the director that you and I are familiar with from our Iron Giant episode, mm-hmm. Brad Bird, and he is making this original science fiction story based on a script by Damon Lindelof of all the controversial screenwriters in the world, Damon Lindelof.
Right.
So you have those two together and you're like, okay, well, this is going to be something that is going to be outlandish and go, and have a risk and it's going to say something and it's going to have a point to it. And instead you get like 2 hours of, Chevy ads and Coke products and would you like to buy these Oreos? And then, you know, she's drinking, you have to drink these Cokes if you go through this portal or whatever. Huh. And so they're, you know, you're drinking it in the classic Coke pose and it was just, it's so, so very safe.
Oh, that's stupid. And it is, after all, named after a, you know, an amusement park section. So.
Sure. And so I would much rather see a movie like this that it's like, okay, well, I don't know. That didn't necessarily work for me, but it was interesting. And there was things in that were really cool. And there's things that I was like, what the hell is this?
And there are things that, I mean, there are moments that it's like, that is something I have not seen before. I mean, you know, I'm very glad I watched it. I mean, I don't regret watching it. And I could see even watching it again for certain parts just because it is fascinating.
Well, you know what I could see this as is I could see it as, you know, how did that scene go? Because I'm going to watch that again. I'm going to put that in this script. I'm going to put that here.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, this section is a good idea. I'm just going to use that in this way or something like that. You know, I think that there are individual ideas that are really sound.
Mm-hmm.
As a whole, like, you know, I think that the IMDb plot synopsis did a better job than I would have been able to, I think, because I'm like, God, what is this about?
Oh, I watched it about a month ago. I read the fairly extensive plot synopsis in the Danny Perry Cult Movies 2 book. And when I was done, I'm like, I still don't quite understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, okay. So where we had left it was Friend. You know, he's named appropriately.
Right.
And it seems like, you know, he's kind of on Sean Connery's side. And then they decide basically, you know what? We've had enough of you. You're being crazy. You're being too negative. You're being too cynical. We're going to give you the spirit finger heebie jeebies and you're going to go.
It's like their council meetings all are like a big brunch or something in this mm-hmm. solarium. And then they use their psychic powers on him and they
send him into, whatever the thing was called.
They age him. Yeah. Because you can't be killed, but you can be made older.
Which I think is hilarious. And I think that that's one of the things that, the director is saying, you know, instead of, you know, what's the point of the movie? Well, I have something to say, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that for this director, writer, director, it seems like nothing's worse for him than aging.
Right. I mean, this movie basically says, like, one of the greatest rights we have is the right to die. Like, right. I mean, that immortality would be terrible and we should be thankful that we get to die. Mm-hmm. It's essentially the plot, it's the theme of this movie.
Yeah. And so, so they send him off. They, you know, I do think that the makeup does a good job in this sequence because I think Friend does look pretty good with the half-filled. You know, and I was like, oh yeah, all right. I like that.
I was kind of dreading seeing him because I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad. But no, it was pretty good. It looked kind of creepy. Old and almost like part of his face was old. It was kind of distorted and
yeah, it's like they didn't go overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, the thing that I did think of, and I think of this every time I see somebody split in the middle like that, is like, did you see that, Mr. Nolan? Did you see how you could do a two-face without having it be completely ridiculous?
Yes. Know,
like, it doesn't have to be quite the CGI or whatever, animatronics or whatever it was. Like, right.
Show off how big our special effects budget is.
Yeah. So that was the thing that, you know, I wrote down. I was like, whoa, better Two-Face? ? But so Zed, you know, he keeps getting his status is sort of, or he's, you know, they're becoming more familiar with him. Like he's less of a oddity, I guess, mm-hmm. as the movie goes on. And then we have this fairly confusing to me sequence where he's like been given something like it's basically like a eugenics kind of situation, right, to where he's got like the best genes ever, so he can't like he's not susceptible to their heebie-jeebie.
Yeah, I didn't quite get that either. Like, yeah, he fights back against it, and yeah, he's not just like one of the brutals. He's like the ultimate human being.
Yeah, he's like a Khan or something.
Right.
You know, he's like, I'm just comic and like and sci-fi referencing all over the
place.
That's
a good reference.
But that's sort of the way that he acts, is that he's like the perfect male. Which, mm-hmm, again, if you're Sean Connery, right, you're virile, perfect male. But
we should mention that before he comes into I keep forgetting what it's called, the zone, the vortex.
The vortex.
When he's out with the other brutals, he is indeed brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's killing, he's raping, it's all very, it's rough. So you can see why people wouldn't trust his character.
Yeah, they do show that a few times, right? When he's taking that woman or whatever they call it.
She's like in a net or something.
Yeah, which is odd. I'm like, because he's, I mean, it's, you know, he's on top of her in raping her, but he's like in his diaper still, and she's like got this net and like an outfit on, and but he's still going through the motions literally. And I'm like, well,
right, like,
all right, like,
Rustin and,
yeah, like,
you know, I mean, it's not like every movie, but movies from this era, they get like that every so often, and it really looks strange watching it now. But I'll bet it wasn't that strange back then. I mean, there were, you know, like movies like Straw Dogs or, I mean, Clockwork Orange, but they're, you know, the sexual violence was, you know, sort of a given in a lot of these movies. And it seems strange to modernize, but it wasn't, I don't think it was that strange back in 74.
Yeah, I think that, boy, Straw Dogs is one that wow, that's, Cameron Rice and I did a Sam Peckinpah filmography, so to where we went through every one of his movies. And Straw Dogs is one where we got to that sequence.
Yeah, that's the sequence.
And man, that still sticks with me, to where I'm like, mm-hmm, you know, and I think the thing about it is she has at one moment like a little smirk on her face.
That's what it is.
And I think that's the moment.
That's the moment that, yeah, that's it.
And I just cannot, you know, anytime that gets brought up, that's the sequence, and that's specifically the moment that I keep thinking of. And I'm like, God, I don't know what to make of that.
I know. You're exactly right. It's that split second smirk that, you know, that movie is, you know, that makes that movie still so controversial, you know, decades later.
Yeah. Which, I'm glad that I have not seen the remake of that.
No, I had no desire to. I mean, yeah. I don't know. The modern remakes of movies like that, I just don't see what the point is.
I don't know. Just, trying to cash in, I guess. Like,
It is. It's such a weird thing to cash in on, though, but I don't know.
Well, like, you know, we currently have Big Trouble coming up.
I heard that with The Rock.
Yeah, and I'm just like, okay.
I like The Rock too, but, you know, let him make his own Rock movies.
Yeah, like, why can't you just, I mean, it's not that hard to make your own, right?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Is it something to where they think if it's a remake that there's a guaranteed baseline?
That's what they must think so. But I mean, like, for a movie like, you know, like, what was it? Last House on the Left. I mean, really a lot of people dying to see a remake of that? I mean, I think fans of that like that movie because it's, you know, what it is. And then I don't think modern audiences even know or care about it. So,
sure. Yeah, it's strange. I mean, then you see, you know, original ideas like Tomorrowland and it just tanks.
Right.
It just bombs huge. So, I don't know. I mean, it bombed worse than John Carter and Lone Ranger.
It did. But although Aloha is now going, I believe, take the...
Oh, yeah. Man, Cameron Crowe, what's your problem?
No. Well, it's... I don't know.
He's so good, guy.
He's so good. Yeah. He's like... I mean, I'm not saying you know, talented or whatever, but it's just... It's like M. Night Shyamalan. You know, his movies don't even have his name on them anymore because... And he was once the selling point of his movies. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, we were talking about this briefly, that there are some screenwriters that are becoming the draw.
Right.
Almost, you know, and one of them for some people and some of the people it's a reason not to see it is Damon Lindelof.
Right.
You know, and another one of them is, I think maybe more emerging on the movie stage, and we'll see how his movie goes. I think that the early buzz that it's going to be an Oscar contender is, Kurt Sutter from The Shield and then the creator of Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
Who is coming out with, Southpaw.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be, yeah, there's a lot of buzz about that.
Yeah, and that was a, you know, written by Kurt Sutter
mm-hmm.
in the trailer, and I'm like, okay, well, that's not often that it's a guy's first, you know, feature screenplay, and it has his name right there.
Right there. It's like, I mean, it wasn't his first, but, you know, it's like Charlie Kaufman. I mean, people will go see a movie for a Charlie Kaufman screenplay. A certain amount of people, I mean, not blockbuster audiences, but.
Sure. Yeah, and that's a thing where, I mean, that's a whole nother discussion about if, you know, people, the masses want to see a Charlie Kaufman film or if that's too challenging.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and obviously I love him and I think, you know, what's his most popular movie? Maybe Eternal Sunshine?
Eternal Sunshine or, Adaptation maybe?
Adaptation. Both great movies. You know, but I mean, when he had a chance to direct his own, he did, what is it?
Synecdoche. Yeah.
Which is it's a fascinating movie, but it is not an easy movie by any means.
No.
It's a tough sit.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough to say because I would rather have something like Zardoz or something like Synecdoche that is written by one person and it's kind of like a one person's vision.
I agree.
As opposed to what you get in like your Star Trek Into Darkness with mm-hmm. the Orsi and his partner and Lindelof with a polish and, or the Transformers films, you know, with multiple exactly. writers or I would rather see something that just tries for anything and fails as opposed to just tried to midline everything.
I completely agree. No? I couldn't agree more.
So I don't know.
Even if it brings us things like Zardoz. Yeah,
That's right. Interesting. I mean, that's what the whole premise of doing these Podshots episodes were, is it started out as films that had really good ideas, but just didn't quite, stick the landing or there was something about it that didn't quite work. And some of the early ones that we did were Prometheus, we did Sunshine, which I think is a wonderful 80 minutes, and then the last 15
was gonna say the
or
exact
so
same thing.
Rough.
Yeah. It's great until and everyone says the same thing. And then why did they do that to the end?
Yeah, Danny Boyle, man, what did you do?
it's a really fascinating movie, beautiful film, up until it becomes a serial killer movie.
Yeah, it's like a monster movie at the end.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? No, it's just Event Horizon. What are you doing?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's kind of the way that, you know, the show had started with films that mostly work, and there's just something about it that doesn't work. And I think Zardoz is in that ballpark. I think that there are really good ideas. I think this is one of the worst posters I've ever seen now that I'm
looking. It's not good.
It's terrible.
It's not good. I don't know who went to see it. Well, I mean, you can see what they were trying. Do you have the one Beyond 1984, Beyond 2001?
Yeah, Beyond Love, Beyond Death.
I mean, I guess it was trying to be a big idea movie like 2001, but it's not. I mean, 2001 is one of those movies where you watch it now, and I love that movie, but it's hard to believe it was as commercially successful as it was.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that was one where, I don't know if I've talked to you about this or not, but I did a movie a day challenge a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I would watch a movie that I had not seen before and review it on like a little blog that was just mainly for me to, keep myself accountable that I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the movies that I had never seen was 2001. And it was one of those deals where, you know how I have movies anyway that are so revered. I'm like, okay, well, I have this obligation to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I was like, all right, well, I don't know what to watch. I'll watch 2001. And I loved it and just like wrote this long post about it and just couldn't believe it. And, you know, looked it up on Box Office Mojo or whatever it was at the time. and was like, it made what? Like, wow, it did that well? Like, no way would it do that well now.
No, oh no, it would bomb.
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick would have a hard career.
He would.
Now.
And his movies, like, especially that one, I mean, I remember watching it with my dad, who had seen it when it came out, and he was like, he's like, you know, it's like 45 minutes before you even see a human being in this movie.
Yeah.
But there's something about Kubrick. I don't know what it is. It's the sound and it's the editing and it's the pacing, but he can just, you know, just the rhythm of his movies can pull me through. I mean, I can just kind of settle in and I'm along for the ride. You know, it's what would be boring in other hands is just perfectly compelling in his hands.
Yeah, it's just that unknowable thing, that ineffable thing that Kubrick has, because there'll be movies that I had watched in the past and not know, you know, when I was younger that it was a Stanley Kubrick thing, or not knowing that that was a person that I should have known, you know. And I watched something like, you know, The Shining or whatever, and even in the slower parts of The Shining, I'm like, God, this is fascinating. Like, this family is so crazy, you know, and all that kind of thing. And then later I'm like, oh, Stanley Kubrick, holy shit, he's a famous guy. You know what I'm like, discovering movies.
It's, I remember watching the last movie of his that I saw was a few years ago was, Barry Lyndon, which I'd never seen.
Oh, you know what? That's so funny because Ben Teed and I are going to do Barry Lyndon soon.
Excellent. Well, I mean, had you watched it yet?
No, I've never seen it.
See, I thought, okay, this is the one I'm not going to like because I'm not really that interested in that period of time. I knew all about, you know, it's all filmed with natural light. So I'm like, well, it'll look good, but it just sounds kind of slow. And that's a movie where when I was done, I was blown away. It is slow, but it just works so perfectly.
Mm. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I really liked it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think we are having a slight Coen Brothers diversion. But other than that, Ben and I have been going through most of Stanley Kubrick's films that we had not both seen yet. Because we did Eyes Wide Shut and what was the other one that we did? I can't remember.
I mean, there's not a Kubrick movie I don't like. I mean, I like all his movies.
Sure. So that was interesting because that was a first watch for me for Eyes Wide Shut too.
I saw that in the theater with my wife.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know, because we talked about that, about how, you know, there was such a long gap between films and the whole production, and about, you know, it being Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and what bigger couple could it be at the time.
And they were married and it's about a married couple and yeah.
Yeah. And just what a crazy movie. And it was one of those where I was like, I don't know how much I'm going to like it, you know, half the way or three fourths of the way through. Like, this is interesting. I don't know am I liking this? Do I like this? You know, like, God, what do I think of this? And watching it. And being very, very thankful that Ben and I had to reschedule because it got over and I was like, man, And a couple days later, thinking back on it, going, wow, I really liked that.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, you know, I wish I had seen it. I mean, I'm glad I saw it on a big screen, but I wish I had sort of seen it not when it came out because there was so much hype about it, like Stanley Kubrick's last film, and oh, it's Stanley Kubrick doing a sex movie, and oh, it's this real life couple playing a real, you know, and there was so many expectations that when you saw it and it wasn't the most amazing thing you'd ever seen, you were almost a little disappointed just because it had been so built up, you know.
You know what's funny about that is this is to a much lesser degree, but I have the same problem with Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive.
Right.
So
I saw that without knowing much about it.
Well, see, I've seen the trailer and I watched the trailer quite a bit. And when I first saw the trailer, I was like, this is going to be my favorite movie.
Cause it's all the driving in the trailer.
And right? I'm like, oh, I'm going to love this. And so the movie comes out and I didn't get to see it in theater, and the movie comes out and I'm like, oh my God, like I'm going to love this. I'm going to do a show on it. I'm going to do this. And then I was like, you know, that's not really fair. Like I had that kind of 2001 expectation for it, you know, almost like, oh, I've put upon myself that I'm going to love it. So maybe I should give it a bit. And I still haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I'm like, I because I still just have that feeling of I'm supposed to love it in my own mind, and I don't want to not love it. And so I'm like just trying to let it like sit for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll like it. I don't know. I mean, it's good. It's really good. It's a lot more violent than I expected. I went with my father-in-law, and there were a couple scenes I didn't care because I've seen everything, but he was like, ah.
That's funny because, yeah, so that's, you know, and I'd mentioned that during that Tomorrowland episode also, and he had said that that's kind of how he was with Interstellar.
Yeah, I was pretty built up for Interstellar.
Yeah, to where it's like, oh, it's Chris Nolan doing an original movie again. This is going to be the best thing ever. And then, you know, your enthusiasm kind of rides you along for a while. Then you're like, I don't know. Am I digging this? I don't want to not dig it. That's for sure.
Right. You know, it'll be funny to see how many people, and I'm sure it will be millions, if not billions, have the same feeling going into The Force Awakens.
Yes.
I'm 40 years old. I was 10 when I saw Star Wars. I know how these things go. I know it can't live up to everything, but somewhere in the back of my head, it's going to be like, this could be the best, you know what I mean? It's like.
Well, how did you see, episode one? Did you go to the theater and watch it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I definitely didn't sleep out or I probably saw it like the opening week. Maybe I didn't see it opening night, but, I saw it and I wasn't one of those people who were like, oh, it was really good. It was like, boy, that was disappointing. I mean, and I think it was partly, it was aimed at a younger audience. And I know a friend of mine we went to see it with, and the whole time through it, afterwards when we went out to dinner, he was like talking it over his head. You could see he was trying to convince himself it was a good
movie. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know what I remember most about that spring is, before Star Wars opened, a bunch of us went to see The Matrix, came out of that and said, I don't see how Star Wars is going to be as exciting as that movie was.
Interesting. You know, when I had, and we're going to do a Matrix episode before not too long, but one of the things that I remember about The Matrix is I was in college when that came out. And I was, I think I was a freshman. And I remember going into different rooms and just hanging out with people at the same dorm as that I was in, and they were like, oh my god, The Matrix is so fucking cool, and I was like, that's not gonna be any good. Ugh, this Matrix is stupid. It sounds stupid. You know, and all of them had the screensaver with the whole code being
right, the code falls on the, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that doesn't look so fucking fun. You know, and I was just like, this, it's not going to be any good because everyone likes it, sort of.
Right. Oh, I'm that guy most of the time.
And I've seen people that haven't seen Mad Max yet that are in that same mode right now.
You know, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, really?
As soon as my daughter's up with her grandparents, I think next week, and we're gonna go. So yeah.
Yeah, and Elle and I went and saw it, and we saw it in the Dream Lounger with the big sound and all that stuff, and it was a lot of fun.
I really want to see it.
You know, it's one of those where, I think that it is worth noting that it is an action movie, and that's all that it's trying to be.
That's what I've heard. And, yeah. You know, I watched The Road Warrior not too long ago for the podcast that we're doing.
Sure.
And I had forgotten. I mean, it is essentially just an action movie, but boy, it's a really good action movie.
Yeah, it's one of those where, the dialogue, you can tell it's the same director because the dialogue is sparse, there's characters that are weird, and there's a lot of fighting and a lot of driving, and,
That sounds good to me. That's what I want to see in a Mad Max movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's fun to watch.
You know, I remember that one more thing about The Matrix, though, is when that came out, I remember seeing one commercial during the Super Bowl, like, whenever that January was before The Matrix, sure. 99. And my first reaction, I think a lot of people's reaction was, Keanu Reeves in a science fiction movie about cyberspace. Oh, didn't he do Johnny Mnemonic? And so I think expectations, maybe until the hype really built, but I think for a while they were pretty low.
Fun. Yeah, that's a much more fun way to see it. I think I got about two-thirds of the way into the movie, and I don't think it was when he – I think it was maybe like the dojo scene, and I was like, oh, man, this is good. Like, I don't know what I was thinking before, but I'm really enjoying this now.
I remember getting about – I forget, like 5 minutes in, but right when when Trinity jumped into the air.
And oh, yes.
Kind of swung around, I'm like,
and she does the crane kind of thing.
I want to see what's going on here. Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of Hong Kong action movies, like a lot of Choi Hark stuff and Once Upon a Time in China. So you could see that element, but I was like, oh, they're bringing that into, you know.
Yeah, and what's funny about that is I distinctly remember seeing that in the theater and going, no, it's going to just be some stupid, like, kung fu thing. You know, and I was just really wanting to be the guy that didn't like it.
Yeah.
But and it was, I got about halfway and was like, oh, you know
what? Well, they tried to make us all the guys didn't like it with those two sequels, but but the first one still really, I think the first one really does hold up.
Oh, the first one's really good, I think, still, yeah. I really enjoy it. The second two are rough.
Rough. There are great scenes in them, but it just, I mean, the first one holds up as a movie too. You know, you get to the end and then, you know, when Morpheus is like, he's starting to believe and you're like, you know, yeah, go, you know.
What's he gonna do now? Yeah.
When he, cause I've been talking to him, I'm sure boring her to tears, but I'm telling Allie, like, you know, my daughter, who, she, keep in mind she's 9, so she couldn't possibly care less about this, but I'll be like, Allie, do you know what when Star Wars, do you know when the movie has its most important point? And she's like, when he blows up the Death Star. I'm like, no, it's when he shuts off his targeting computer, you know, and it's like, so let's
use the force.
The emotional things. So we're watching The Matrix, not all of it, I wouldn't show all of The Matrix, but I said, look, when Allie, when he's running out of the subway and then he stops to fight, I said, that's the climax of the movie right there.
Mm-hmm.
As he's, you know, he chooses to stop. And so,
yeah, that's good though. That's good. She's got you making sure that she knows all of the points of plot.
And then I took her to see Paul Blart too.
Oh, that's right. I remember seeing you posting that and I was like, oh, well,
but you know, I went hoping it would be terrible. I mean, I'm like, well, this will be, I want it to be really bad. I didn't just want it to be mediocre. I wanted it to be awful. And it was.
So that way you could be like, see, listen.
No, I didn't want to do that because she liked it. So I didn't want to ruin the experience, but I wanted to be able to like write about it and kind of, you know, enjoy it on that level.
That's much more fun, right?
Yeah. I didn't want to just, you know, she likes what she likes. How could I possibly even play 9 times out of 10? She'll grab a Marx Brothers movie off the shelf to watch.
Mm hmm. That's true. You know, one of the things that we are watching is she's getting out of the things that she's been getting out of the Miyazaki lately, and I've been like, oh no, what are you doing?
I know.
Why are you watching these live action, like, ABC Family things? No! Get out of that!
But that's, you know, but you gotta let, you know. That's
oh, sure. And I so mean, it's I've... like, so I'll tell her, like, yeah, you can watch that. Just watch that over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
When I was a kid, I watched crap.
Oh, sure. Yeah. One of the things that you didn't watch when you were a kid was Zardoz, though.
I did not. Yes. And swing it back.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is interesting is we have this sort of climax where Zed is able to penetrate all of the borders, right? Like, he's able to... He's basically Neo, who knows what he is now, or, you know, mm-hmm. who's able to do whatever he wants. And we have this really long sequence of all of the immortals just being killed.
Yeah, just all of them. He just, yeah, the exterminators come in, they kill pretty much everybody, and the immortals, they welcome it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they finally get to die.
And so I'm watching it, and I see it for, you know, a few minutes, and I'm like, okay, yeah, all right, I get that. I get that for the story. That makes sense. And we're still here. And we're still doing it. I'm like, God, this is going on a long time. You know, and it's just gunshot, gunshot, gunshot for a good, like, 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, it goes on for a while.
And I'm just sitting there like, okay, like, I got it half the time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, all right, I don't know. I'm enjoying this fine, but you're really dragging on me on this extended version of this gunshot thing.
I mean, even crazy violence gets boring if it goes on long enough.
Well, sure. And, you know, then we have, you know, different instances where they're showing, like, the ketchup or whatever on their hands. And
it's really
not convincing. And
Yeah, blood effects, not good back then.
No, and we see a guy that gets, like, cut in the back of his neck, and I'm like, oh, that looks bad. And,
yeah.
You know, and all this sort of stuff where it's like, just cut that out and just save the 2 minutes. Like, we don't need all of that.
We get the idea.
But I do really like the... kind of oddly abbreviated Sean Connery and Charlotte Rampling family.
I like that a lot. It's like the very last images you see. I really liked. It was such a strange way to end the movie.
Well, yeah, and you know they finally get together and they're a couple, and then you know it's like right away she's pregnant, and then you know you see the aging. It's got the setup of like a When Harry Met Sally kind of a thing.
Right.
There's two.
Yeah, people they're sitting. It's almost like a bunch of family portraits.
Oh, taken, sure, sure.
Yeah. Fading into each other and everything.
And so I think that's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy that. And you know, you get to see the little makeup as they progress in time, and then they're eventually skeletons. And one
and
of
they
the
have
things,
a kid too who grows up, and then he leaves.
Oh, that's right. I didn't mention that they do have a child, and so that's how you know that it's the men that are impotent and
because
not the
Sean,
women.
Sean, he wasn't impotent.
That's right.
Not Sean.
You knew he was hot for her from the beginning. So. Right. So there you go. But I do like that in the IMDb trivia, it says, reportedly, actress Charlotte Rampling looked forward to her sex scene with Sean Connery, then was disappointed when it was over and done so quickly. And so I think that that's really funny. I mean,
that's hilarious.
That's one of those things where it's like, oh, hell yeah, I'll throw that out there. Yeah, I was ready to have a sex scene with him, whatever, you know.
That makes me like Charlotte Rampling all the
time. Yeah, that makes me like her a lot. You know, my first introduction to her was Swimming Pool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was the first time I'd seen her, and she was naked in that movie as an older woman.
That came out in the 2000s, right?
Yeah, and I was like, what? I'll go see this French movie where it seems like there's something that's going to be naked. Whatever, I'll go watch that.
Of course.
You know?
And, not made of stone.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know who this old lady is, but the other one's getting naked. Okay. And I was like, that's an all right movie. And then I was like, oh, Charlotte Rampling. Like, she's a famous lady. It's a little bit like the way that I was with Stanley Kubrick. It's like, oh, that's someone that's been around forever. You know, you look at her IMDb, she only has 117 credits. I mean, it's not like she's hurting for work. So, but yeah, so we have that ending, and we have all of the immortals that are being killed, and we have this one couple that has a child. And I kind of was left thinking, like, okay, so it's going to be the Brutals and this one kid? Or...
Like, yeah, I don't know if he went and left, so was he joining the Brutals, or was the implication there was going to be some girls out there?
I don't know. Because they went into that cave, and I was like, well, where are they? Like, where are they at?
And then last thing you see, they're just like skeletons.
Yeah, then they have the handprints right over there. Yeah,
yeah, on the walls.
Because May, she leaves, mm-hmm. the one that liked him, and she takes off, and so I was like, okay, well, she's not going to be with her normal people, and then she doesn't get killed off.
Maybe she went out with the Brutals.
Yeah, maybe. And then you just have this child that it's like, well, that's great that you had one kid, but what about like the rest of the world?
Poor kid.
Yeah, it's like this poor one guy is like, oh, you know, he could have been killed 5 minutes after he left the
and so screen. He wandered out of the cave and hey, should we spoil what where the title comes from?
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Yes, I have not mentioned that. So this is spoilers, and most of the shows are spoilers.
Yeah, they're spoilers. But this is too good not to explain. Sean Connery, you learn, was a sort of – he was disillusioned. You know, everyone thought Zardoz, the giant stonehead, was this god. But he discovered that in a library, and he read, like, every book they had.
Right, and Arthur was in there. That was
yes, and Arthur was in there kind of leading him around. And then he gets a copy of as soon as I say what book it was, you're gonna show
you
get a copy of Wizard of Oz, and discovered if you cover up parts of the title, it spells out Zardoz. And it's a movie about a guy who pretends to be a giant head, you know, to trick people, and so that's how he found out it was Arthur Frayne in the head.
Yeah.
Or at least he found out somebody was in the head.
Yeah, he knew that it was all a sham then, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought I kind of think that that's really clever. Like, I really liked that it was actually something, I guess.
I like it too, yeah. I mean, I've heard people kind of mock that, but I like it. It was some thought put in. It's kind of fun, you know, it's kind of, it's amusing. It's clever.
Yeah. I feel like if you're going to have a title and it's going to be so odd as Zardoz, that there should be some sort of reason behind it.
Right. And plus, this connected it. I mean, because the movie allegedly takes place in the year 2293, but this kind of connects it to our time in a way.
Sure.
You know, gives it, you know, that one connection. So
it doesn't.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it doesn't really answer the question as to why you have to cover up certain.
No, because they actually show him with his hands covering it up.
Yeah, and they're like, no, see, for real, look, watch me put my thumbs over these things.
We get it, because he covers up the too. No, we really get it. You didn't have to.
And I was like, that's not the way that the Wizard of Oz looks. Like, it's the font's a little different, but I'll go along with it, you know? And so that's kind of funny. You know, there's some little things that... I was noticing, like, the first guy that is killed, the first one of the immortals, like, his mouth keeps on moving after he's killed, and there's all these different little goofs, and, you know, there's Sean Connery's tattoos are visible at one point, and I'm like, well, all right, whatever. Like, it's kind of one of those where once you get into the mind frame of what to expect from the film, then... You see things like that, and you're like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's all right, you know?
I mean, I figure at the beginning, if Arthur Frayne sort of puts you off, and then the floating head completely puts you off, then you're not going to go with this movie. But if you go with both of those things, I think you'll at least be interested enough to watch it to the end.
Yeah, you know, because that's how I was for sure. I was like, well, what is this? This is odd. As opposed to, no. I'm not going to like it.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of well, this is weird. Kind of a mind frame as opposed to a dismissive kind of thing.
Yeah, and if a movie's got, I mean, even if it doesn't hang together well, if it's got like a million little weird things, I'll watch it for those million little weird things.
Sure. Absolutely. That. Absolutely. All right, well, is there anything else about Zardoz that we may have missed there, Will?
I don't think so.
Yeah, this is one of the rare movies where I took very limited notes because I didn't want to like be distracted by looking down and writing.
Because there's because
you know, you have all of that visual business with the kaleidoscope type crystal at the end and
in the room, and the stuff with their rings that glow, and then you have the apathetics, like the people who have stopped caring about everything.
All right.
And Sean Connery, I think, feels one of them up too.
Yeah, he certainly does. Yeah, and that was one of the things I was finishing this up in the afternoon, and Anna was here, and I was like, she's kind of like, what is this? Is this another Star Wars thing? And I was like, oh, don't worry about it. And it's like the last 5 minutes or so, and there's a woman that gets shot, and she's well endowed. We'll say, and I'm like, don't show that. You know, the little one's right here. And then they were doing something. I was like, Anna, why don't you look at mommy for a second? Look over at mommy. And she's like, what? And I was like, just don't look at the TV. Like, there's boobs all over the place right now. So it was kind of one of those things. I was like, oh, whatever. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, that's the American audience in me to where it's like, there's all these people getting shot and I don't mind her seeing that. But then, God, there's a boob and
boobs.
She better not see that.
I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
Odd. Especially because, you know, she'll walk in on her mom all the time and be like, oh, hey.
Right.
What are you doing? Yeah. You know? Exactly. But for me, it's like, don't you be walking in on your mom. Don't you be seeing any boobs. I don't care if you're a girl.
You know? You're my girl, by the way. I know, and I have a daughter too, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Okay. So if there's nothing else about Zardoz,
I think we've covered it.
Mr. Pfeiffer, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for this show, for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. If you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to amazon.com and you could search for our wish list. It's full of the movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies if you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. Remember, I just got engaged, so we would appreciate anything that is over there that you would want to buy for us. So I do want to thank Mr. Pfeiffer for coming on once again and discussing the film with me. If they wanted to hear more from you or maybe support some of your writing, where could they do so?
Well, I actually, funny you mentioned that, we have a new movie podcast going too called Out of Theaters.
You it's do. On iTunes. And that is coming out fast and furious.
We're trying to release one a week. That's our goal.
Well, you know,
no, I don't do any of the production, so that's not my call. That's my friend Billy. But
here's the thing: from a 3 or 4 or whatever, however long it's been.
Since yeah, you any advice
is do them as often as you can, so that way you can build up a little buffer.
That's what we're doing. We're doing 2 tomorrow night. So
oh,
we're gonna,
well, there you go. That's very smart.
But what we do in this one is we take a classic or semi-classic movie that I've seen, and I watch it with a friend of mine who has never seen it, and we try and sort of come at it from that angle. So
yes,
it's interesting.
And say the name of it again.
It's Out of Theaters.
Out of Theaters.
So we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and we have a website, outoftheaters.com, and we are on iTunes.
Yes, I will say that it's a good time. I do subscribe to that podcast.
Thank you very much.
And I have been listening, and it is it's a lot of fun.
Thanks. We're still finding our way a bit.
Well, that happens. I mean, that takes a while. You know, I listened to the first probably year or two of our show, and I'm like, oh, my God, that was so bad.
Oh, I know.
You know?
That's how we feel right about now.
it just takes a while of like, well, we're not going to do that anymore. Like, we used to do different segments, and we used to have all these different things that we would do. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just act like we're at the bar, and we've had a couple drinks, and we're just going to talk about the movie, and that's it.
Exactly.
And that's kind of how – and Rachel and I sort of found our way doing that. So
I think it works well.
That's right. So thank you again, Will, and thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
Zardoz has spoken.